I'm Daniel Gross, Executive Editor at Strategy and Business. Welcome to our podcast, Talking My Book, in which we sit down with authors of exciting new books on business, economics, management, and globalization. Today, our guest is William C. Taylor, or as I call him, Bill. Bill is one of the co-founders of Fast Company magazine, and he's the author of well-known management books like Practically Radical and Mavericks at Work. His new book is simply brilliant, How Great Organizations Do Ordinary Things in Extraordinary Ways, which is published by Portfolio Penguin. And we're grateful it has brought Bill on the Acela, I'm guessing from Wellesley, Mass.
Indeed.
To our studios high above Park Avenue. Bill, welcome and glad to have you.
Great to be here, Dan.
So I enjoyed the book, Brilliant, and I recommend it in part because, you know, we live in this miasma of pessimism, name-calling, circular firing squads, and this kind of general...
You've been listening into my family's dinner table conversations to what's going on here.
This kind of droopy dogness that really permeates both our kind of business and political culture. And, and you've managed to find a bunch of positives, and you know, many of the examples come from the U.S. Here's a sort of, in a nutshell, the thrill of breakthrough creativity and breakaway performance doesn't belong just to the youngest companies with the most cutting-edge technology or the most radical business strategies. It can be summoned in all sorts of industries and walks of life if leaders can reimagine what's possible in their field. And you tell this through looking at banks and cleaning services, jam bands and burger flippers, cheap inner city buses and healthcare clinics. Yeah. This is not the stuff that is on our headlines every day. So how did you get to this?
Precisely because it's the stuff that's not in the headlines every day. I mean, this book is appearing shortly after the 20th anniversary of the founding of Fast Company magazine. So for 20 years, I've been in the business of thinking about and chronicling dramatic creativity, digitally driven transformation, all the exciting stuff that, you know, gets folks like us worked up about the promise of business.
I should note that we have Fast Company to blame for much of this
hellhole
we inhabit.
Indeed. We were doing a couple things. First of all, we're leaving out of our own thinking, pick a number, 80% of the economy that's got still not much to do with that world. The other thing I worried about, because they go off and do a lot of speechifying to executives, is executives in long-established, pretty traditional companies had a kind of ready-made excuse for not thinking as hard, not thinking as open-mindedly, not thinking as creatively they should about transforming. Hey, you know, it occurred to me that at some point, those folks needed, I guess I could say it, a wake-up call, but in a more positive way, they needed an invitation to get with the game, come on into the program, to sort of embrace it. So I set myself a challenge with the book of saying, could I take that same sensibility of being open to and looking for really dramatic and exciting and compelling new ways to create experiences, new ways to use technology to rethink business models, but set the material in rather mainstream, rather main street fields of endeavor.
Speaking of, one of the examples you use in your chapter on missionaries over mercenaries or why passion beats drive is a company I'd never heard of, and I, you know, claim myself, pride myself on my omniscience about everything that's happening in the world. PAL Sudden Service.
Yes, yes.
And, you know, if there's an industry that is universally believed to be busted in terms of its business model, it's fast food, whether it's food safety, its wages, the type of food, the health impact, the future of these industries, the use of technology and automation. But these guys seem to be thriving in a completely, you know, low wage, seemingly nowhere job, seemingly not very educated workforce. What is this company and what do they do that distinguish themselves?
So here's the story about PAL Sudden Service is a 28 location. It could be much bigger if they wanted it to be, but sort of as you're saying, they don't want to have world domination. 28 location burgers and fries and milkshake operation in northeastern Tennessee and southwestern Virginia, the mountain empire region. So it's going to be
the hotbed of innovation known
indeed,
as Appalachia.
It is between the Appalachians and the Great Smoky Mountains. So I'll get to, here's how I found out about PALS. I'm really into innovation and healthcare. And so I was up in actually Anchorage, Alaska with this absolutely remarkable healthcare system that I write about in the book. And when I go visit a company, I always ask them, you know, what other companies do you learn from, study, whatever? And here I am sitting with these tremendously impressive healthcare executives and doctors. And they say, you know what? everything we've learned about hiring and training, we've learned from this company, Pal Sun Service in Tennessee. It's a burger joint. So I started studying, and it turns out, all right, so that's why maybe you didn't know about Pals, but I it was one of these weird connections kind of deal. So Pals, they make burgers, fry shakes. Food is great, very, you know, healthy and everything, as fast food could be kind of thing, but that's not what distinguishes the company. This is a company which says to its customers, first of all, you don't sit in their restaurants. You just drive up, order your food, get it, and they have picnic tables outside, or you go on your way. They say to their customers, we are going to be so efficient, so consistent, so reliable, you drive up to our window, it will take you no more than 12 seconds to place your order. You then drive around the other side. You will sit on the other side for no more than 18 seconds, and we will deliver you your order. It'll be in a bag, and we will be very insulted if you open the bag to see if we get your order right, because we always get your order right. Now, always. They make a mistake once every 3,600 orders, which isn't perfect, but it's pretty darn close. It is such a model of consistency and reliability. Now, that said, the stores themselves are very whimsical. They're designed in these crazy, colorful, whimsical ways. The employees are very fun-loving. There's a lot of personality to this thing.
We should note that Bill's publisher, Portfolio, has provided us with a couple of copies of Simply Brilliant that we'll be giving away to readers. If you send an email to gross_daniel@strategy-business.com, that's gross_daniel@strategy-business.com, we'll enter you in a drawing for a free copy. And do they do this through Six Sigma or military-style drill instruction?
They do it through a greater commitment to learning and training than just about any organization I've seen. So a lot of their workforce is, you know, 16- or 18-year-old high school kids. Mm-hmm. 40% of the workers are high school kids. They go through 110 hours of training before they get on the job.
For which they're paid.
Not only that, and they're trained in multiple jobs, you know, and all that kind of stuff. Not only that, every day when people report to work, the first thing that happens is the computer pops out two names. And it's a random thing. And if your name comes up, you have to get retested on whatever, fries, whatever the case may be, packing bags, retested on something to make sure you're still kind of in sync and in line kind of deal. And it's not in a punitive way. If you don't pass the test, they just train you back up and so on and so forth. It's not about punishing people for being off. But, you know, they say, look, machines go out of calibration. People over time go out of calibration. It's just a deeply both rigorous company in terms of hiring and training, and also a deeply thoughtful company in terms of what does it mean to be a leader and that sort of thing. To the point where Pals a few years ago won the Malcolm Baldrige National Quality Award, very prestigious award, the first restaurant of any kind to win this award, an award won by FedEx, Ritz-Carlton, and this burger joint in Tennessee. And so they now have their own university, the Pals Business Excellence Institute, and other companies from, you know, hotels. It's a two-day course. I went to it, yeah. You know, as part of the research. People from the hotel business, people from the construction business, people, not surprisingly, from the fast food business, people from local governments, a sort of nonprofit ballet troupe was there. And they spend 2 days immersing people in the Pals' point of view about how to hire right, how to train right, what do leaders do. And it's just this, I mean, it's a small company, but it's made this huge commitment to a kind of rigorously intellectual right. approach to the business.
So, you know, one of the things we hear a lot is that nonprofits, universities, hospitals, institutions, government has to act more like a business.
Right.
If we just make them act more like a business, the business has all this stuff to teach them and they don't want to learn these lessons. That's why they're inefficient and they're no good. But a couple of the most compelling sort of stories, examples, anecdotes come from nonprofits,
yes. or
people who are not in it
right.
to make money, yet do have a lot to teach us. One of them was a Community Solutions. This is the homeless organization,
absolutely.
In New Haven. And you use that to illustrate, I believe, the concept of what you call provocative competence.
Yes.
So
Community Solutions is actually based in New York City. I went on their work in New Haven. Community Solutions was created by this truly remarkable woman, a MacArthur Genius Award woman by the name of Roseanne Haggerty. She's kind of a legend in New York social services circles. Starting 10, 12 years ago, she would buy huge properties, dilapidated hotels and such in New York City. Get all the big investment banks to help her out with creative financing and stuff. She would spend 3 or 4 years, $40, $50 million renovating them and turn them into these beautiful, functional, wonderful spaces for homeless people to live, get treatment, and sort of address the issue. And she was celebrated and won a MacArthur Genius Award because she had a really dramatic and ambitious approach to addressing the problem of homelessness by being creative with their real estate and her financing and building these just gorgeous facilities kind of deal. She woke up one morning and said, "No, this is great, and I think we're making some progress, but, you know, there's, what, 400,000, 600,000 homeless people. Each of these projects takes 3 years, $40 or $50 million. We can house 800 people. Mm-hmm. It might make us feel good to do it. We ain't doing anything to really solve the problem." So she flipped the whole thing on her head. And to me, the term I like to use is she confronted the paradox of expertise, which is the longer you've done something and the better at it you've gotten, to some degree, the more locked in you get to. This is the strategy. This is our. She said, "No, I'm gonna totally flip the model and say, first of all, we don't want to just address homelessness. We want to end homelessness. So we're going to have a campaign. And the official goal of the campaign is to sign up cities, and I think they wound up signing 180 cities, who are formally going to commit within a period of 4 years, we will end chronic homelessness in our city," meaning people lose a job and are homeless for a week or a month, that's something. "But people who are homeless for a year, living on the streets for a year or more, that simply will not be allowed to happen. And secondly, we will go to zero homelessness of any sort for military veterans." And she, rather than building these tremendous real estate things, she began this kind of grassroots movement. The idea was, we will take any apartment, we will call on any church, we will do anything to get people housed as quickly as we can in as many places as we can. And so you mentioned New Haven. I went out city by city. They got churches, United Way volunteers, and they would go out for 2 or 3 nights, starting at 3 a.m. and going into 7 or 8 a.m. when homeless folks they're really the only ones out there on the town green or whatever. And they would do an actual census and you would go in and you would gently wake people up. You would say, can you answer a few questions? You would take their photo, if they allowed you, and they buy a legend. And they basically developed kind of a war room of pictures, stories, histories, and they put faces to names to these anonymous people. And for each of these people, they developed strategies for getting them housed quickly. This was so at odds with how homeless advocates did things. She wound up, Roseanne wound up recruiting to lead this, a West Point graduate, Iraq War veteran, who took a lot, a woman by the name of Becky Margiota, great woman. She said, you know, she was in Iraq when they did the playing cards with all the bad guys. She said, "These are not bad guys, these guys want help, but let's do that. We're going to actually have, you know, figuratively speaking, playing cards. These are the people we have to get housing for." Anyway, on and on it goes. It went for 4 years, called the 100,000 Homes. They wanted to house 100,000, and they made it happen. And they are now, by the end of 2016, this year, going to zero veterans homelessness in city after city after city. So to me, what was brilliant about it, this was literally a award-winning genius leader who said, "I've built up this reputation, I've built up this way of doing things, and it's awesome, but ultimately it's not going to actually solve the problem I want to solve. So I've got to put that aside and come up with a completely different way of not just addressing a problem, but solving it."
But it's this idea of sort of humility, in the sense that even though I'm at the top of my game, I'm the CEO of an organization, I have all these accolades, the market is telling me, you know what you're doing, to recognize and be willing to actually execute a plan that kind of rests on, well, maybe I didn't know what I was doing, or maybe other people know better. And there's another example of this in, which, again, I had not heard of it, was Goldcorp.
Yes.
Which is a wild story. And it's a for-profit example.
Yes. So, yeah, it's a fun, Goldcorp is a great story. It is just also such a great metaphor of this leadership mind flip, which is so hard for people to do. So a guy named Rob McHugh, I actually met him long ago when I was still sort of in the day-to-day editing of Fast Company. And he was this classic, he was a Wall Street guy, actually. Grew up in Canada, worked on Wall Street. But, you know, he did well on Wall Street. He said to himself, you know, if I ever strike it rich. I don't want to buy a Mark Cuban and buy a basketball team, or if he's Canadian, buy a hockey team, whatever. I want to buy a gold mine. So this gold mine comes up for sale, the Red Lake Mine, way, it's way, way north, you know, I don't know, 18 hours north of Toronto or something like that. The good news is up for sale. The bad news is it was up for a good price because it was like this, the most pathetic mine right. in the world. And I forget, at the time, this is before the big run-up in gold prices, it costs like $360 or $400 to get an ounce of gold out of that mine. Gold back then was selling for like $300 an ounce. But the Red Lake mine was right next door to this other mine, the Campbell Lake mine, which is very rich, very productive. And Rob figured, like, if there's gold over there, there's got to be gold over here. We just haven't found it yet. So he did what smart guys do. He went up there. He hired five or six PhD geologists, gave him a big exploration budget. It costs about $1 million every time you drill a hole 4 or 5 miles under the ground to look for gold. And they did it for a year or two and kind of nothing much was happening. Then he actually went to MIT for a week-long executive education course on open source software, the internet, all the stuff where all these ragtag groups of programmers volunteer their time, their effort, and this kind of light bulb went on. He went back to Toronto. He said, let's do for gold mining what open source software has done for software. And the engineer there, and it was, look at, let's, we've got 75 years of detailed geographical information on this mine, everything our predecessors yeah. have done, everything. Let's put all the maps up on the internet. We'll invite people all around the world to crunch the numbers, come up with their own plans. They'll tell us where they think we should mine for gold. We'll call it the Gold Corp Internet Challenge. We'll give $500,000 grand prize, will convene a panel of judges, and we'll just tap the brain power of the whole world. His team was very, talk about not so much humility, it's humiliating. You paying us all this money, we can't do it, we're going to kind of, you know, in the immortal words of Sting, send an, you know, SOS out to the world kind of deal. But they did it and unleashed this. This was just this incredible energy all around the world. And they wound up getting 1,400 people from all around the world downloaded the data. 140 people wound up submitting these really detailed drilling instructions. And this is not like back of the envelope, you know, drill up. These are like right. rich files and 3D visualization. And long story short, the Red Lake mine is now recognized as the single richest, most productive gold mine anywhere in the
It's another Sting song, Fields of Gold.
It is indeed. There you go. You're rapidly exhausting my string, my Sting repertoire.
In Simply Brilliant, Bill Taylor has hit upon an important theme, the idea that one of the ways companies distinguish themselves is by focusing on their distinctive capabilities, the things that only they can do. This is a theme we explore frequently in strategy and business, and I'd urge everyone to check out a significant article we ran on the topic earlier this year. It's called Creating a Strategy That Works by Paul Leinwand and Cesare Minardi. You can find it on our website, strategy-business.com.
To me, they're very different examples, very different fields, but these are two leaders who said, and this is one of my favorite challenges to exist, is we're not going to let what we know limit what we can imagine. We're not going to let all the things that made us successful sort of circumscribe our capacity to come up with entirely right. new ways
and
to succeed.
And of course, that's sort of the default mode, right? When I was at so-and-so, I had all this success, we did X, so therefore we're going to do it again. You know, when we think about sort of the cutting edge of what's going on in business, it's often violent language, right? Disruption,
right.
destroy, dislocation, so-and-so is killing it.
Right.
It's brutal, it's nasty, it's Darwinian, and these are the ones who are taking no prisoners. But in your book, I run across phrases like, civility is not the enemy of productivity. And you were just talking about humility. Is the founder of Fast Company magazine pushing for a slower company?
You know, it's funny you say that because as I won't say as I get older, as I get more seasoned, I guess one of the I often say to myself that the founder of Fast Company has begun to appreciate just how slow, deep-seated, meaningful transformation, particularly of existing organizations, can be. And that's not always the worst thing in the world. But the second thing that has really been striking me more and more, and I try to write about it in the book, is that in a world that in so many ways is being reshaped by technology, what customers and colleagues really are hungry for today is a deeper and more profound sense of humanity. In any way, leaders and organizations can look for opportunities to send, and this is not, small signals, little gestures, opportunities for real human beings to simply behave as real human beings do. Mm. And these small gestures of kindness or compassion or connection that we make in every other aspect of our lives, but in part because of this violent rhetoric we use about business, in part because of, again, our cultural obsession with technology and the internet and disruption, just ways for people to assert their basic humanity. It gets recognized, it gets valued, it gets celebrated. I mean, one of the little phrases I use in the book, which actually maybe oddly came from Jeff Bezos in a speech he gave to Princeton, my alma mater, was, in this day and age, it's just as important to be kind as it is to be clever.
Now, if this was a TV show, that the next frame would be people at Amazon crying at their desks.
Exactly. So trust the art, not the artist, maybe. But we've got some thinking to do about what kinds of cultures are we creating. And so in this world being reshaped by technology, spending some time rediscovering the power of humanity in our organizations is, I think, a very worthwhile thing for leaders to do.
So while we're on the note of common decency, I will very decently recommend that our listeners purchase your book.
Yes, thank you.
Which is simply brilliant, How Great Organizations Do Ordinary Things in Extraordinary Ways. You know, it's very easy for business and management books to descend into cliches because there are only a certain number of good ideas out there. And I think what you've managed to do is to give us the kind of clever framing and wording, but to really back it up with stories like the ones you told that people can relate to.
I think storytelling in this day and age, storytelling becomes more important than ever because people need to see things in order to A, believe things, but also B, work up a modest amount of willingness to try some of this on their own. And I think increasingly that's how people learn and that's how people get more of a capacity to act, I hope.
Okay. Well, that's going to be the end of our story for today. Our guest again is Bill Taylor, author of Simply Brilliant. I'm Daniel Gross.